Diana Telly has built her own fishing vessel, this incredible fishing vessel, Ocean. Folks probably know it. It's a troller and a sailboat. Diana and Rick own Taku Marine. She has sailed. She told a fantastic story last year. She sailed when she was pregnant with her daughter. She is a fisherman. She's a woodworker. She's a great friend of mine and has been a fantastic role model. So this is her second time getting up bravely for She Tells Sea Tales. Let's give a big round of applause.
Thanks for coming tonight for supporting this program. So, we were young, but we were bold and adventurous and idealistic, romantic, and highly impractical. We were sailors. And our Puget Sound fishery had grown so well and so fast that we were in need of a mothership with a proper fish hold that would replace our 14-foot rowboat. So a Wooden Boat Magazine boat cover photo, and then Providence took us to a heretofore, unbeknownst to us, Caribbean country called Belize. Now, at that time, and I'll bet even now, about 95% of all commercial fishing activity took place on sailing smack boats. The country and its waters were abundant with these colorful, attractive, simple, hand-hewn boats. And I mean hewn with machetes. They were all almost identical, built of local hardwoods and pitch pine, and all had ample midship fish holds. And they varied really only in size and possibly craftsmanship. And of course, the kinds of recycled materials that were used to rig them. We immediately knew that one of these boats was going to be perfect for us. So we went searching, and we traveled on buses and outboard skiffs. We hitchhiked in cars and on sailboats. And in a really short time, we were able to see pretty much every single boat in the whole country. And the one we chose was one of the larger of the fleet and fairly well built. She was 32 feet long, 9 feet wide. She drew 3.5 feet, so down below was a crawl. Her boom was 35 feet tall. Excuse me, mast was 35 feet tall. Her boom was 26 feet long. The jib carried a 13-foot club that overhung the bow and was lashed through the stem head with a poly line through a hole in the stem head. It was one of the most simple, easy to use, and clever rigs I had ever seen. Big sail area, no lazy jacks, no reef points. There was a bolt rope sewed to the luff of the jib, which acted as the forestay. So if the jib was down, the mast was only supported by the shrouds. So we were always inclined to keep that jib. Our shrouds were heavy gauge, twisted copper wire that were connected to ceramic electrical insulator dead eyes. They worked great, by the way. But together, you just knew that those pieces were an onshore electrical unit at an earlier life. It was perfect. Every boat came with a dual-purpose depth sounder / river anchor. It was very slick. In the form of a 16-foot pole. It laid on deck. So if you're sailing along and you're thinking, oh man, it's been kind of shallow up there, someone runs up forward, picks up the pole, and jabs the bottom.
5 feet! 3 feet!
It actually happened to us once, but when you're tilted, you know, and you draw 3.5, you can actually sail over 3 feet. It's all coral down there, by the way. Oh, but that same pole was perfect when you took your boat to Belize City, which every boat did because it was commerce. You would motor up the Belize River and you'd find an empty spot and you'd take that pole and you'd jam it into the mud and you'd work it down and you'd push it and you'd push it and you'd get it just so and you'd put your bow line around it and you were good to go. No mortgage fees. But I'll tell you, picking up that pole when you were ready to leave was really a mess. So let's see what else. Oh yeah, I remember. Every boat had internal ballast, which consisted of a huge pile of really dirty rocks and hundreds of large, friendly cockroaches. But it was to be our charming new home for quite a while. So we went to buy our boat and we knocked on the door and the fisherman's wife came out and I said, hello, we'd like to buy Isela. And this is how she responded. No. My husband loves that boat. He would never sell that boat. Go away, salam. And we were so disappointed because this was the boat we wanted to buy. But very early the next morning, the fisherman's there, hat in hand, and he said, you know, I actually do think I want to sell my boat. Can you just imagine how dinner was at their house that night? You said what? So we sailed the boat to Belize City and we hauled at the second largest shipyard in the whole country. And it was so small, it made our shop in the Boat Haven look like Townsend Bay Marine. It was really small, but nevertheless, we set about doing repairs and painting the bottom, and we built bunks and storage bins where the fish holes had been, and then we started to try and buy things, anything we thought we would need that would assure us that we would get to Panama safely. But you know, you couldn't buy much of anything. You couldn't buy a local chart because every year or two, a hurricane would blow through, and any channel there might have been would be completely rearranged. So we did manage to get a large-scale chart of the Caribbean, which basically said, you are here, and Panama is there. We got a used sextant, let's see, a shortwave radio for timekeeping. We had one really well-used life jacket. A leaky rubber life raft. It was much of a life raft. We had some sail needles and twine and some flashlights. Some friends from the Northwest brought down a compass, some HO249 tables, some pilot charts, a book on sailing directions, and boutage. We were ready to go. But we had one last cup of coffee at Mom's Cafe with a sailor who had actually been to Panama. And he drew a chart of Limon Bay, which is the entrance to the Panama Canal, on a table napkin as a final aid to navigation. I have great empathy for youth. So we took off. We were heading southeast, but in order to get southeast, we had to go north first. We had to avoid the barrier islands and then the southern coast. And so we were heading north, and as we left the barrier islands, we realized that the Caribbean was kicking up a huge storm. Big winds, big seas, and it was blowing northeast. And we had to make as much northing as we could, and we were pinching it and pinching it and pinching it, getting north, and we finally reached a point where we thought, okay, we're probably safe. We can probably tack south now. This will probably be good enough. And so we tacked down, and in this stretch of the ocean, there was only one island to watch out for. It was called Lighthouse Reef, and it's beautiful. And as we sailed by it, it to our lee, our jib blew to smithereens. Yeah. And this sail rig would not maneuver out of a situation like that without a jib. And I remember him standing on deck and saying, well, you know, you're the guy with all the sewing experience. He did say that. So I ran forward, got the jib, I held on with my toes, and I did the coming home sail repair. Maybe some of you know it. The stitches were that far apart. But we got the jib back up and we clawed ourselves off the reef and we continued on our way. The Caribbean Sea is a different body of water than the Pacific Ocean and even the Atlantic. It too has a lot of fetch, but it's very shallow. And if any kind of wind is blowing, the seas get pretty big, really big. And I remember one day sailing along, it was a beautiful day, sunny, and I saw these mountains, one right after another, coming right towards us. And I swear, when we were in the trough of that wave, and I would look up at the peak of the wave coming, it looked to be about equal to our mast. And every time the boat sailed up to the peak, peaked, and sailed down to the trough, sailed up to the peak, peaked, sailed down to the trough, it's beautiful. And you know, I was never afraid. Part of that was because it was pre-momdom. There wasn't a single person on the planet who required my existence to stay alive. But the other part was, I was of that generation that was taught and fully believed that I would never live past 30. I was pushing 30, and so I was living the dream. But having said that, I will share a confidence with you. Part of this trip was at the height of a storm, and during that time, my sleeping apparel consisted of a short shirt, no pants, no little pants. One of my jobs was to handle the sails in the middle of the night. And for many, many nights, sometimes more than once a night, I would be down below in my dry bunk, and I would hear, "Drop the main!" And so I would crawl to the hatch, I would jump on deck, and I would make my way forward. And I would have to hold on to the mast and the shroud, and I would take my foot and lean it against the tow rail, and that's it. And I would unlash the mainsail. And so his job was, of course, to bring the boat into the wind, which was terrifying. Every single time I'm hanging on for dear life, the boat is bucking violently, the wind is shrieking, waves are coming over the bow, sometimes up to my waist, and every single time I was so scared, I peed my pants. But I didn't have any pants. Because once we got into the eye of the wind, I'm letting out the main, so I'm letting out the halyard, I'm pulling down the lacing, kind of bringing in the mainsail, and we are packing like this, right? You know, it's the worst part of it. And then, of course, the worst part was the headboard gets to be about head level. Did I mention the headboard? The headboard was about triangular. Two pieces of hardwood, through bolted, to the peak of the main. And when it came down like a wild thing alive. And my job was to try and tame it. Can you imagine? And I just got lucky every single time. So finally, during this trip, we came upon the point of land that we've been pinching the sails for all this time. It's called Cabo a Gracias a Dios. Or as Christopher Columbus said, the day he discovered it and named it, Cape Thank God. So he and we were now able to ease our sheets, take it a little easier, and tend to other things like salt sores. And then, finally, we come up on some lights. These are the first lights we've seen in 3 weeks, and we're thinking, this is probably it. So we got out Mom's Cafe Aid to Navigation napkin. This is it. And it was just an amazing night. Beautiful light breeze. We're kind of ghosting along, and we're feeling pretty good. I mean, we're good, aren't we? And then we say, oh my God, look at all those really big container ships that are anchored in the bay. Gee, they all have their running lights on. Oh my gosh, they are anchored. They are moving, and they're moving at us. And we don't have any running lights. So we grabbed one of our flashlights, and we shone it on the mainsail, and we just hoped for the best. And they missed us. But we continued on with our aid to navigation, which showed us where the quarantine anchorage was in the inner harbor, and we dropped our hook and got ready for the next part of our voyage, which was to transit the canal and sail home. But that's another story.